You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. Or you could try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need. Oh, yeah.
Stones, Robert, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for jumping on so quickly.
No problem.
I'm excited about this one. Where are you in the neck of the woods? You're out west, aren't you?
So I'm based in Calgary, Alberta now, yes.
Okay. All right. But occasionally you come out this way. I know we've seen you on TV a number of times. Are you still doing the TV things?
I'm doing quite a bit of TV. Yeah, a lot of Canada and US media. So like just yesterday afternoon, I was doing, I think it was Oregon, Fox News 12 in Oregon. So lots of that going on. Just about every day.
What do we want to talk? Is this just cybersecurity, or what do we want to talk about this? Like, what's the topic? Like, what's the heading?
Cybersecurity is a good one. I mean, it's probably top of everybody's mind. I think a lot of folks are finding it a little bit challenging to speak about because it seems like it might be very technical. I think I get a lot of questions.
We're dealing with tradespeople here. They'll totally understand everything we're talking about here.
Oh, exactly. So this is why I'm in this room today, because I have one of those tradespeople. I've got
they're doing some work?
Drywaller in my house right now. So
awesome.
Doing a great job. Yeah.
You're doing an addition, or you're doing a remodel of a room?
I'm doing a remodel of the master bedroom. So it's top to bottom, right to the wall. So they're basically doing a nice smooth ceiling. It was a popcorn ceiling, everybody's favorite thing. So they're smoothing that over, and he's on the sanding stage today. So really looking forward to seeing how it looks this afternoon.
So let me just do a quick shout out. I got Stott HVAC. I'm wearing his t-shirt today. Thank you so much, guys. Keep up the good work. And then we're talking to Robert Falzone here from www.checkpointsoftwaretechnologies.com. You can find him there. You can also find him on LinkedIn as well under his name, and his email is robert@falzone.com. How long have you been in this space?
This would be my 30th year.
Why'd you get into this space 30 years ago? That would have been 1994.
That's correct. Yes, as a matter of fact. So it just really one of those things where it was an opportunity that presented itself. I had a gentleman walk in the door of the place that I was working and said that he needed problem solvers in this place that he worked. And I was pretty excited as a young man to have this, minimum wage job at a computer store. And I thought, wow, I'm really kicking butt here, making the big bucks finally. But he offered me his card and said, if you ever change your mind, give us a call. I'd love to help you out. So I waited an entire year because I had no idea who Ed was. Turns out Ed was EDS. So I took him up on his offer one day, much to his chagrin. I called him up and he was like, "Who's this?" I'm like, "Yeah, remember that guy you said you'd help out even if it was later on?" He's like, "Oh, yeah." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm calling in that favor if you don't mind." And he was like, he kept his word. So he put me in front of the head of the engineering group at this company, and I went in for an interview. I was quite poor at the time, and he told me that I had to wear a suit, and this company required everybody in there to have a degree in a suit. So I went to the Salvation Army and found a suit that fit me. Unfortunately, the only one that fit me was lime green. but I looked like the mask when I walked in there. But he tried not to laugh very loud, and then wrote me a little note saying, welcome and a modest salary. And that's where it all started. So I've been involved in security since that time, and I've lived all over the world and had a really great time. This particular aspect of technology has been extremely rewarding, and I think it's been something that I feel like I was meant to do. So
let me start off by asking you, Robert, where in the world is the safest place cybersecurity wise?
The safest place to be?
Yeah, like that's they're not. Like, we all know Siri and Alexa, they're all listening right now. They enjoyed the podcast. They love it. So everyone's listening right now in North America, and I can only assume in Europe and Asia. But I'm like, are we talking about an island in the middle of nowhere that's got no... That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, somewhere there, or like on an island somewhere would be great, unless you have a giant Faraday cage at home that you can lock yourself in where no signals can get in or out. that's probably your best bet, to be honest with you, because technology is so incredibly pervasive now. Obviously, it's tracking us in just about every device we use and count on. So it's not gonna get any better in the near future. So.
So, I mean, Robert, is it like, are we to think that, okay, I'm Joe Schmo. I'm in construction. I walk around and I've got an Android or an iPhone, and I'm nobody. I'm literally nobody. I have a job. I go to work. I have a family. I have kids. I come home. Are they just listening in because they want to just continue gathering this data on who Joe Schmo is and all the billions of Joe Schmoes out there?
That's one reason. But I have to ask you, Manny, do you have a cell phone? Do
I do.
you have a laptop?
Yeah.
Yeah, bank account.
Yeah.
Right. Do you have a vehicle with any sort of connectivity in it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have, maybe you have a smart television at home that you watch TV on, that
Yeah.
like a new LG or something like that?
Yeah, we're on a
So
smart TV
the
right
answer,
now talking to you. Yeah.
well, yeah. So the reason I say that I bring that to bear is because I get this comment a lot, especially when it comes to people who I try to carefully warn them of the risks that they do face, especially the Joe Schmoes of the world. And the problem is that it's a false narrative. The fact is that if you have any one of those devices that I talked about, you are a target, and you're a target because it may not even be you that they're interested in. They're interested in simply that you are an individual, identifiable as an individual, and that you have all those devices, which means you could make yourself a potential target to be included in some sort of attack. So rather than them caring about who you are, they just want to be able to use your person, your existence, to attack somebody else and to remove any suspicion or prevent it from being pointed back to them. So every single person who has a laptop is at risk of being a part of this problem, right? So the people that choose to just plug their machines into the internet without a really serious security device between them and the internet is really taking a tremendous risk, because at this point, not just the data, which we can get into next and what massive issue that is, but just the fact that you exist as an individual person is enough for a hacker to be interested in who you are and whether or not they can gain access to your life, if you will, via your devices.
Yeah, now I remember the last conversation you and I had where it was like shit in my pants, basically. Like we were talking about certain things. I know you told me about certain stories and certain situations, and we got into talking about this being applied to business and about people listening in on phone devices that were not even turned on in
Sure.
certain rooms, right? And you're
Yep.
negotiating a final deal, and then all of a sudden someone's finding out information that they would never have been privy to if they were in that room. You know what I mean? Like that's the
Correct.
problem. So this is where the business corporate world comes in. And I said Joe Schmo, but the thing is you're 100% right. When we want to go buy a car or get a house or purchase something large ticket items, we have a certain list of things that we have to show to prove who we are. But now, digitally speaking, someone can do that digitally and present your avatar, so to speak. And now, for
Correct.
some weird reason, halfway around the world, you're purchasing something. I remember last year, it was one of my credit cards got flagged because someone was trying to purchase an Apple product in Korea
Right.
over a
Right.
$1,000 item, and then they tried again at $900 item, right? And then they got flagged, and then I got contacted, and they said, "Listen, are you in Korea?" I'm like, "I'm not in Korea right now." And then they canceled the card at that point. There was no purchase made. There was never a charge or whatever, but I guess it was. I'm trying to figure out how they got that, but I've been to so many trade shows, so my information is shared all the time. Whenever you go anywhere in the world, your information, digitally speaking, is shared. So then, someone or somebody out there is like compiling this stuff, right?
Correct, correct. And it's interesting because the amount of data points that they share, or that you share on a daily basis, the amount of data leakage that you have as a person is probably well beyond what you even understand is happening. There's been some significant challenges that just occurred. So I have a couple of electric cars, and one of my vehicles is a Chevy Bolt, which is a small electric car.
Yeah.
And it's became sort of infamous in recent times because it had a bunch of challenges and problems with it, with the battery systems. It was one of GM's first widely popular electric cars. And what ended up happening with this vehicle was that in the US, because of its connectivity, they began essentially collecting data on all sorts of people who are driving from A to B, whatever. It was like their braking events, their acceleration events, where they were location-wise, times of day, things like that. And then they turned around and they were selling it to a company called LexisNexis, who was then turning around and using it to sell to insurance companies to raise the rates of people whose data stated that they were doing like hard braking events or accelerations and things like that. Which, it, when you look at it, somewhere buried in that contract for GM was probably some, statement somewhere in 0.2 font that said, everything that you do or say in this vehicle is ours, and we can sell to whoever we want. I'm exaggerating, of course, but the fact is that that data did in fact get sold multiple times, and then now these people are contemplating legal action because the amount of data that they took about them. And in many cases, they suffered immediate harm, which was that their interest rates went up dramatically, right? So that's one example. Another one that was, very familiar to me. We offer this information often. We willingly give it away for some very small token, right? So in the, I think about probably the biggest thing that terrifies me is the folks who are going and doing these DNA tests, and they're buying a DNA test, and then they're turning around and they're providing their actual DNA. This is like the fundamental building blocks of who you are, that it's unchangeable. It'll be only yours. It's unique to you. And they're giving that to a company. They're paying that company to take that from them. And as we've seen now, there was a major a breach where all that data was stolen for, I don't know whether it was hundreds of thousands or millions of customers had their DNA stolen in a breach. And I think about that now, and you think, okay, if somebody could sell that data to an insurance provider who could then say, well, 2 years from now, I'm not going to insure your son because we found out that there's cancer in your family, right? And so this amount of data, this issue between, issue between data and privacy and security, they're all related, and it concerns me that we're not as well educated about the actual risk to ourselves, to our person, as we should be in order to make better decisions for ourselves and our families.
But everything that you just talked about, because I know that there's certain people that are not purchasing EVs because they think of that whole, I don't want my car to be controlled, or I don't want my data, I don't want to be all this other stuff. But that's all happening in all kinds of internal combustion engines as well, because of all the smart connectivity that's going on in that car. I know that in my car, there's a red button I could push, and all of a sudden I'm talking to somebody right then and there. It's basically an advanced version of OnStar from the 80s, right? And they know exactly where you are. They know everything. Like, they know exactly on the roadway where you are. They're just asking you, are you on in the middle of the road, or are you on the side of the road? But they know exactly geographically where you are. And I'm like thinking, whoa, what's going on here, really? So it's not so much EVs, it's just modern tech.
Do you, well, as EVs are particularly heavy on the electronic side, right? If you look like a Tesla or something like that, it's the entire thing is automated, and every single system has its own computer tied in. So, but you are 100% correct. It is also internal combustion engines, and each additional year that we move forward in model year, there are more and more capabilities or more what's the word? Telemetry that is being captured on a regular basis about that vehicle. So what I'm curious though is, man, you probably don't remember at any point actually giving explicit permission for them to do that.
No, not at all. But there was a huge contract when you signed it to take the vehicle, whether that was a lease or a purchase or whatever. I know there was a huge contract, and of course the salesperson is encouraging you to read everything, which, like you said, is probably 4 or 5 point, and then you sign at the bottom line, which the bottom line is what, 10, 12 pages later? And I'm pretty sure if I were to comb it, I would find some sort of statement there that says that whatever you do in this vehicle, like that, like you just said. But I mean, now it's what's the alternative? Is are we going to go back to manually driven vehicles, and we're going to roll down the window kind of idea? Is that what we're going to have to go back to?
No, I don't think so. The fact is that a lot of these advancements also bring a lot of benefits for us, right? We just have to do a better job of understanding and being able to balance our own expectations of what those risks are to us and whether or not the benefits are worth that risk. And unfortunately, I think what's happening is the technology has proceeded so and become so sophisticated so quickly that many, many people are left not understanding what the actual technology is doing and therefore cannot make a realistic and informed choice about how their data is being used, whether they're secure, and things like what questions to even ask in that scenario, or whether or not they can even opt out, or what their rights are in that respect. So I think that that's where, you know, we want to continue seeing these improvements. When I look at some of the incredible benefits, for example, I'm doing a cross Canada tour right now, and I'm talking a lot about artificial intelligence and machine learning. And, you know, it's in some ways it is a bit of a buzzword because everybody's using AI. My toaster's got AI, got AI, toothbrush has got AI now. But the fact is that some of these, like the real usages for AI and ML systems and the advanced technologies that we're seeing, like in, you know, LLMs like ChatGPT and things like that, they are going to actually provide us with improvements in the way we live to improve outcomes for personal health. And for example, if I could get a customized medical plan, a preemptive medical plan for myself based on my own DNA, that would be, you know, would help me to live a much longer and more fulfilling life because the medical outcomes for me would be much improved based on this AI being able to analyze and provide me this predictive medicine, right? So those are incredible things that I think we'd all wish for our family. But we just have to do a better job of understanding what the other side of that equation is and how we manage that risk more effectively, right? So like, if I think about it, When you were a kid, it's probably around the same time I was a kid. Yep. On watching cartoons, you used to have like Smokey the Bear, or I think there was some electrical one too. I can't remember.
It was all like Looney Tunes for me. Something. It was all just Looney Tunes for me.
Looney Tunes, yeah. But they on the commercials, you would get this Elmer the Safety Elephant.
Yeah.
Don't play around.
Fire prevention. Yeah, stuff like that.
Fire prevention, right? So I honestly think that we need the same thing now for kids. But it needs to be cybersecurity, cyber hygiene, right? So, you know, a kid's watching the cartoons and it comes up and says, hey, don't share your password on that chat site with anybody. Don't tell anybody where you live. Don't share pictures from your phone to anybody, any strangers. Like just things that super simple things that could go a long way to protecting our kids and better ensuring that they have a more solid understanding of what the risks are to them and explain it to them. Don't keep it from them. That, I think, just that small thing would probably have a lot of benefit as we move forward. Because then when that person is a teenager and they're selecting their first TV, they might go, do I really need the one that, you know, checks my blood pressure while I'm watching a movie? Seems cool, but do I need it, you know, and be able to make a better choice.
So which is the real evil here, Robert? I mean, is it the devices themselves or is it the social media platforms that's collecting all this instant data based on what you are looking at, what you're consuming, what you're watching for the whole length of the video, and then what you're learning, whether it's cooking tips or building tips? I mean, there's a lot of data being collected here by social media platforms, right?
There is social media, a massive vacuum, but remember companies themselves, the corporate world is collecting just a gargantuan amount of information about you on a daily basis. You walk in and out of a store.
Yeah.
That store often knows, they can see the Bluetooth signature of your phone because all of them have a unique thumbprint. I do the same thing in my house, by the way, as a test. I can tell when a stranger walks by my house with a cell phone I've never seen before, and then I can correlate how many times they've walked by my house and when. They don't even have to come in, right? So stores can do this as well. They can tell whether or not you've stopped at a particular medicine aisle. And if you spent any time there or looked at a particular product, they can see like all of this data is the stuff that really starts to zero in on who we are and, you know, what our weaknesses might be. And of course, from a consumerism perspective, they'll argue that this data is being provided to them to help them better serve you or to better suggest things that you might need. But the reality is, as we've seen, is that they're collecting so much data, they're doing often cases a very poor job of managing that data. The legislation isn't there. It doesn't have enough teeth to provide any sort of real incentive for them to do a better job of safe storing it. So that data is getting out there and it's being stolen and it's being recycled and reused and sold. And, you know, like the show I did yesterday for Fox in the US was about people receiving SMS messages, smishing it's called, SMS messages that were fake and basically saying that they went through a toll and didn't pay it. And if they didn't click on this link and pay it right away, they would owe $50 in a week's time. So of course they're preying on your emotional response to click on that because I don't want to spend $50. And as soon as you click on it, now you've been targeted, you've been caught, right? Now imagine that simple message, that SMS message, if it was instead of just being, "Hey, random Joe, you went through a toll," what if it said, "Hey, Manny, I understand that you were at the Toronto Town Centre yesterday, and you ran over somebody's I don't know, foot, or when you were backing out of the parking lot." And you'd be like, wait a second, because now they know that you were at the mall. What really happened was they stole your data from a company, maybe a parking company that was tracking your vehicle or something for parking purposes, right? And the fact is that because they didn't manage it properly, now this hacker or this scammer has access to more details about you. And of course, the more details that are personal about you that a scammer can use, the more effective those attacks will likely be, right? And that's the real issue here, is that we don't have any sort of limitations on how much data they should be collecting. We don't really say you can't do that unless it's very specific to payment information like PCI. We basically in Canada, you can collect whatever you want and you can do whatever you want with it, really. And that's unfortunate because that's where I think this issue lies.
So you're saying the word hackers, which is kind of funny because I just recently watched that movie from the 90s, which was kind of cheesy with Angelina Jolie and everything.
Good movie. I like that
It's a good movie, but when you look at it now today, like it's kind of a little cheesy, but it kind of gets that sense there. But you say the word hackers and I say the word government. Like me personally, I don't want to get political, but the thing is, I was stunned how quickly it was our government was able to lock out people's accounts. And just shut that down. And that's a digital component there, right? And I'm just like, at what point is there a line going to be drawn between cybersecurity hackers and just mischievous people that want to do some harm to you and actually create a profile of yours? But what's stopping the government from doing that? Like kind of telling you, we know what you're doing. We know what you're spending. We know what your money you're being made or what we know everything about you. Like we don't want to live in that society, right?
Yeah, and I think as I would say before too, that the challenge here is that our government is also responsible for protecting us from other governments, for example, right? And we see recently the Canadian Cybersecurity Center just released an advisory. The head of the center basically came out and said, you need to remove TikTok from your phone immediately. This is a significant threat. We have folks who are of, for example, the Chinese diaspora, right, who are being specifically targeted by the Chinese government for various different reasons, whether it be political or what have you. And it's a real threat, and it's kind of frightening. We saw what happened with our interactions with the Indian government a few months ago, right, with the things that happened out in BC with the hired killers and so forth. And you look at those things and you go, okay, again, this is, we need our government to have enough information to be able to act on threats like this. And they have to have the ability to effectively be able to identify these threats. And the only way they can do that in a society where everything is encrypted and the technology is the way it is they also have to be up to date and have to have the ability and skill sets to be able to do that. And nation states have unlimited budgets. Right. So if you're competing against a Russia or a China or some other or any other country, and you're an individual, the stakes are not in your favor. The odds are not in your favor. Right. So we need our government to be able to protect us from those things. So I'm in favor of them having many of these abilities, but I think there needs to be a line drawn in where those abilities meet your need for privacy and your ability to disconnect, if you will, right? So I think if you owe taxes, yeah, they should be able to find you to get you to pay your taxes because I pay mine and I want my neighbor to pay theirs and I don't want to have to pay theirs. So it makes sense that they should be able to find them. But I don't need them to know, that I had a heart murmur last week, or I don't need them to know that I'm thinking about having another child or something like that. I don't need that information. To me, it should be where these limits are drawn. And I think that's where legislation could come in place to help them identify all the way down to the municipal or even to the commercial level what sort of data should be gathered on an individual, what sort of rights you have to see and know what data is available about you. In the EU, they have this ability, right? The privacy laws in the EU are far, far more advanced than the ones we have here in the US or Canada. They have the right to be forgotten in many cases. You can basically have your information removed from Google or other search engines. You have the right to look and see what your doctor knows about you. You have a right to see what the government knows about you and demand to see that and change it if it's wrong. Or contest it if you believe it's incorrect. So that, I think, is the right way to go when we start talking about how, you know, we are being reduced into our ability to provide data, essentially. Like we're just, you know, we're incredibly valuable that way.
It's a two-way street, though, with the government, right? So a couple of things. You can't have a government come out and say, listen, you need to stop using TikTok and not mention Facebook or Instagram. You know what I mean? Like if you want to stop, like then you should basically say we need to stop social media. We know that there's a lot of negativity associated with social media. You're learning quickly that the younger people that are using social media are going to have major optical issues because of the amount of strain that's putting on their forming eyes. Right. So we're already seeing it that you're going to get a lot of generation of this generation that's using these devices. They're going to need glasses. They're going to possibly need laser surgery. They're going to have eye issues because we know for a fact that that whole doom scrolling is affecting your vision. Right. As an adult, it doesn't affect it as much. It still affects it, but it doesn't affect it the way a growing eye affects it, right?
Yeah.
So when it comes
your vision,
to
how about your ADHD?
Yeah, and all that stuff. So, but when I go like, if the government's able to block out a bank account from a citizen, then we should be able to have full transparency of them too. Like it's just, you know, there's a lot of magic trick going on. There's a lot of stuff going on in our members of parliament, and so they can't be enforcing these things on us unless we're going to enforce them on them too.
So I think it's worthwhile differentiating the primary reason why the directorate came out with regards to TikTok specifically, and that kind of goes right back into the reason I'm here, which is specifically about cybersecurity. So as we know, Meta is technically owned by a board. That board is head by, you know, Mr. Zuckerberg, and you know the other one. If you look at Twitter or X now, is it was Elon Musk, right? These are American interests, American-owned interests, and as a result of that, the challenge with TikTok is that it's actually primarily owned by Chinese interests, which are also, as we know, in China, all interests in China are owned, or in some way, shape, or form, or at least are obligated to cooperate with the government, no matter what, in any way or capacity necessary. So the challenge specifically with TikTok was its Chinese ownership and the fact that they are explicitly gathering data on Canadian citizens that is being exfiltrated to China and being used against Canadian interests here. So that's why that specific message, at the exclusion of a Facebook like Meta or an X, I don't disagree with you. I think that there's absolutely a need to examine. Well, I think we don't even need to examine. We already know the damage that's being done. We can see it firsthand. The problem is, though, in my personal opinion, I think we've let them grow too big to manage them. I mean, they have more money than the government. They have more the ability to change the minds of, you know, billions of people by simply creating a post. I mean, politicians don't have that. They don't have that reach. And of course, they can mute you if they don't like what you're saying. They can essentially turn you off. So I don't like any of those things. I don't like what they've done to our culture in any way, shape, or form. I don't like the fact that it's created this culture of instant gratitude, or not gratitude, instant gratification. Shortened attention spans. I've seen the damage it's done, you know, even for myself. You know, and I have to use many of these tools for the work that I do. It's incredibly difficult. So, but separating that from the cybersecurity aspect of it, if I was to come out with a warning for those services, my warning would be more related to stop giving away all of your stuff for free. And we like to complain about Facebook and Instagram and that sort of thing. But what I often say is that complaining about Facebook or what they're doing there is like cows complaining about steak. Like, we are the product.
Yeah.
So they couldn't care less what we think or feel about what they're doing. They're doing it anyways. And us complaining about it is almost comical because we keep supplying them with the what they need to continue doing it. So, I don't expect everybody to turn off Facebook tomorrow, but boy, oh boy, I think we would be in a much better situation
I agree.
globally if they did.
I agree. I think a lot of it has to do with you got a whole generation nowadays that is almost exclusively getting information on one platform for the majority of it. And the problem is that they're getting their information from that one platform, and I'm talking about TikTok, is because there's so much misinformation on all other platforms. Like, I can't tell you the last time I watched a broadcast channel. And I've seen people talk about how most commercial adverts on broadcast channel are pharmaceutical driven. And so there's a lot of, you can go right or left, and I don't want to get down this whole road about all this stuff. But it's like you're getting people trying to find the truth. And I would love to go back to the good old days of the 50s and 60s where journalism was supposed to express both sides of an argument. And that's dead and buried now, and it's never going to get revived. And the problem is that it depends on your platform, what you choose, you get that version of the truth. And so I think people that want to try to find more information, unfortunately, you're going to go down a rabbit hole to try to go get this information. And then you're going to find out maybe certain things that you believe and certain things that you don't believe. And so it's really scary that cyber and digital and all this stuff can easily be created and manipulated. You're 100% right that there should be more governing behind it. And it's almost like when you walk into a grocery store, I still find this really funny because you'll never catch me in the cereal aisle, right? I just will not be in the cereal aisle, right? And the thing is, you'll see, because it's all garbage, it's just pure garbage. You'll see sections of the grocery store that says health foods. But my mindset is every food in here should be healthy. And when I see certain countries like Italy outlawing genetically modified meat and outlawing GMOs and all that stuff, there's a reason why when you eat pasta in Italy, you feel different than you eat pasta in North America. And I have a hard time when I go to a grocery store looking for pasta that has two ingredients in it, right? So all the other pasta has a number of ingredients in it. So I'm just trying to be aware of what I want. And I'm looking forward to the day where I can Truman Show, bow myself out, and completely like that, I guess the Matrix, whatever, you go to black screen and you go to a line and a dot and then you disappear and that's it. You get off the grid. I think that's going to be extremely difficult for everyday people that want to operate a business, connect with their families. Nowadays, it's like your children go and they all have smartphones. And so you know exactly what they're doing or where they are, but you don't know the specifics of what they're doing. But you're 100% right. It's easy for them to get manipulated to share information that can be seriously used on such a negative way. And what I would love, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think, I can kind of in my time frame, I've always been involved in technology for my entire life, ever since I was a kid. And one of the I guess what you say, one of the Rubicons I think we crossed was, and I remember it very well, is when they decided in the US that companies were people. And that ruling that occurred, the Supreme Court ruling, I forget what the name of it was, I'm sure some of your listeners might know it, but essentially what it stated was that now, corporations had the same rights and privileges and consideration as you or I would as an individual, except they have billions of dollars more than we do, and much, much more influence than we do. And as a result of that, from that day on, I think we started to see this thing where we begin weaponizing knowledge. We begin weaponizing the news, if you will, even to suit whatever narrative we're trying to get it to suit. And the reason for that is because there's money to be made, and we can make money on the left. You can make money on the right. It just depends on what your message you want to, what you think you'll have the most success with. And the challenge here is that somewhere in all of this information, you mentioned that we're looking for the truth, and I also am always looking for the truth, or things the most reasonable version of the truth I can find. The problem is that now we're seeing that we're redefining what that means. You mentioned the food. if we didn't have GMO types of strains of wheat, for example, half the world would have starved by now. We'd be in famine because of the fact that we can't possibly feed all the people that exist on the planet without doing a better job of learning how to better raise the crops and things that we need in situations where there are drought or pests or whatever it is, right? So, but that's become a narrative again where we say, okay, companies got a hold of that and said, well, I can also use that same idea, but instead of making it so it's better for people, I'm going to make it so I can make more profit, and it's going to be shit for people, but it doesn't matter because we're allowed to do it because somebody else decided to do something good. We can take that same idea, the same premise, but we can make something just cheaper that maybe might not be as good for you, but I can sell it for a lot more money, and therefore somebody else will get a hold of that and go, oh my God, GMO is bad. Like, this is a genetically modified food. It's terrible for you. Meanwhile, there's one over here that's actually better and would save a lot of people's lives. But there's this false equivalency created between them. And I think this problem is that somewhere in the middle, there's a truth, right? The truth is that the idea is probably altruistic. It's probably great. But the execution of that and the way we manage it as people, screwing it all up, if you will, is where we start to fall down. Because now you have two different truths, or somebody's redefined what that means, what good for you means.
Today's truth is driven by profit.
I agree. That's the point. I guess that the very precise way to say
which it shouldn't really be when it comes to humanity. It shouldn't be. Like, I understand the Zuckerberg and the idea behind it, but even when I was trying to understand the origins of social media, because you can basically say that Facebook was the origin of social media, right? That's where it really started, and it just exploded from that point. In his thought process, you kept on thinking, how do you monetize this? How do you monetize? How do you make money from people conversing to each other? And then all of a sudden, when the light bulb came up, it was the data that you're collecting from every single user that's being developed there. And then that data, who's it going to be sold to? Now, if it's sold to a group of people that care about humans and they want to take care of people, they want to figure out problem solving and how to make them live longer and how to get them to eat right and how to exercise better, that's great. But if you want to modify food to make people sick sooner or get disease, like that whole world, that's what I'm saying. It's like there's two truths here. But the truths are driven by profit. So you can get somebody like Elon Musk, which you could like him or not like him. But the thing is, he does care about humanity. He wants to try to do certain things. But, you know, he took X and changed it completely. And we're going back right or left. And I don't want to go there. But the thing is, like, there's a lot more dark truth than there is light truth going on because of this manipulation of the data that's being collected by all these devices. And I think in the future, you're going to get a lot of people that are going to try to figure out, probably even reach out to someone like you. How do I get off of this? Like, how do I just cut this tether and just, I don't want to be a part of this. I want to use a manual gear shift vehicle that has carburetors. You know what I mean? And I don't want to have a smart TV. I'm going to have a fire in the backyard. I'm going to be like cooking, you know, vegetables that I grew in my backyard, those kinds of people. And I'm like, that's appealing to me because I don't like that technology. I've had several conversations around my phone, around my computers, around Mary. All of a sudden adverts are coming up for those products that were connected to those conversations. Right. So I guess I'd love to get into, Robert, with you about how do we protect ourselves? I know you earlier on, you mentioned how you've got a system that, before your internet gets to your device on at home or something like that. Like, I'm not a fan of the Ring. I'm not a fan of all these other devices that automatically allow you into the vehicle or into the house. And I told somebody recently where it's like, you, garage doors now, the openers, they're all tech savvy. They're all app enabled. They have cameras. They have lights. They have motions. And you can open up your garage from halfway around the world and let somebody into your garage and they can get the lawnmower that they want to borrow or something like that, right? And so, you know, obviously in Toronto here, I don't know how it is in Calgary there, but auto theft has just gone rampant, right? Like stupid rampant here in Toronto. And I had somebody else on the show where they install bollards, right? So they're putting those piles in front of your driveway and then preventing people from stealing the vehicles. And so I opted to go through that old school latch on my garage door, the one that you manually have to put in. And my garage door guy said, why don't you just use the one that's connected to the system, right? Where you can turn it on and off anytime. And I said, well, then the thieves can do that too. And he goes, yeah, they can. So I go, I'd rather manually. So manually, you'll have to destroy that door to get into that garage, right? And I opted to do that. So it's like I'm more interested now to do certain manual tasks. And I'm not so sure. much worried about TV. And I've lost so much interest in streaming these days. Like I'm completely off of streaming that I've got my collection of DVDs and Blu-rays, and I keep on building my collection of DVDs and Blu-rays, and I can still watch those on a device and I'm not connected to the world, right? But I want to figure out from you, how can we protect ourselves? How protect our family, ourselves, our businesses? How do we, what do we have to do first of all? Because the thing is, we can't get rid of these devices. We have to operate our businesses and our lives with these devices.
Yeah, man. It's only, so the bad news is it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And so that is an absolute fact.
Great to
and
hear.
Yeah. There's things that we can do, but the reason it's going to get worse is because again, the sophistication is increasing. Biggest worry that I always have is whenever we talk about a new technology, we have to talk about not just the benefits and the risks that it poses, but what sort of social impacts will that technology have? So obviously I'm going to go back and talk a little bit more about the AI stuff, because there hasn't been a technology in the last, good Lord, like 60, 70 years or more that has had or has the potential, has already had, but this has the increasing potential to change humanity the way this technology does, AI and ML in general. So the reason why it's important in the context of this conversation is as we continue to accelerate the adoption of these incredibly sophisticated technologies, we, to your point, are walking past these folks who might be like, you know, my father, my stepfather, who is, you know, in his 70s, I'm being generous, and rightfully is not interested in any of these technologies and doesn't want to go and do his banking online and wants to have go into the bank and have somebody stamp his receipt for him so that he can see it and it's tangible and he has it. And I completely understand and respect that. But the problem is that the bank is incented to make that go away as quickly as possible in favor of a service that might be connected to some online system. And that's just the banking. Now, what if we start doing that to the medical situation? What if we start doing that to the food provision capabilities? There's no grocery stores. You have to get that stuff online technically. So that's just somebody who's, you know, empowered and enabled like my, you know, my stepfather or other folks who are of that senior in that senior citizen category. What about folks who are in less capable circumstances, like somebody up in the far north, maybe on a reserve somewhere? Yeah. They already have poor access to things like drinking water. Now, we're going to completely remove the ability for them to get medical help or to get you know, other services from the government, for example, because we're going to completely turn them into a technology-focused and delivered tool. So we have to think about socially how these technologies are going to serve everybody. And I don't know that enough work is being done in that area, because to your point, it's all about maximizing profit and reducing overhead and expenses. And often an older person might be considered an expense, either, you know, financially or to society,
yeah,
right?
That's true. Yeah.
And that's a problem. So with ML and AI, it's accelerating more and more rapidly. So it has the ability, for example, and I mentioned those folks, you know, who are maybe underserved in our northern communities. Imagine now being able to deliver them healthcare services in their own language, even if that language happens to be, you know, one that's not common or not widely known. We could deliver that to them in their own language. We could make sure that the medical advice that they get is accurate and is rapid and is responding directly to their specific needs. That's the promise of AI. So there's a reason to want to go that direction if it's done properly. For us to say we're going to disconnect, that's not going to happen, because if we do that, there's going to be critical services that you literally are not going to be have access to then for that reason. So if you want to be a wilderness person and go find somewhere in the woods to live and be self-sustaining, you might be able to do that. That's still probably possible in a place like Canada or some other places in the world, but it's going to be, that's not something that's that most people can reach. It's not attainable for many, many people. Either they don't have the skill set or that just the environment is not there for them to do that, right? So we have to think about now protecting ourselves. What do we do given that society is going to increasingly move in this direction, how do we protect ourselves? And I think the first step is based on how we consume. I always say vote with your dollars, right? Think about how you consume things. And you've made a very critical choice with your garage door. You said, you know, would it be nice to be able to, it's cold outside, would it be nice to just have the door open itself and then I could get out and close it without having to walk out? That's an amazing thing that you would love to enjoy. But you've made the critical choice that in enjoying that luxury, you are now putting your financial health in danger because you are risking having your vehicle stolen and your premiums increasing and the hassle and headache of not getting to work and so forth. So that simple choice that you made right there is the first step. And choices like that must be made all the way through our buying choices. So as I mentioned, the toothbrush. Do I need an AI-enabled toothbrush? Do I need a toothbrush that's connected to the internet? Does it have benefits? Okay, maybe it does have benefits, but you know, I love technology more than probably most people that I know. Yeah. And I have an immense amount of it in my house. My whole home is automated. But I've taken extreme steps to make sure that I know everything that's happening in that home. And that I know that, you know, the systems that I'm using are not connected to the cloud, right? So you can do home automation and you can do it locally. You can make sure that you get those benefits and you have to take the time to do that, right? So the more we understand, right, when I buy that router from, you know, Best Buy and it's got a home automation thing in it, don't just turn it on and plug it in. Educate yourself about what is it going to give you and what do you give up for doing that, right? There's been so many cases where you mentioned we've talked about TVs and Blu-ray discs and things like that. There are simple tools, even that the manufacturers provide you, that you can turn on to start filtering or reducing the amount of information that they get from you. And these are tools that exist in a lot of the technology that we already own that we simply don't turn on, that we don't use. Right. So if you go into your television, you'll find in most modern televisions now that are for sale, you'll be able to go into the settings menu and you'll find settings related to how much data is gathered and shared about the TV and the experience in your home. Most people aren't aware of that.
No.
But it exists for most people. So if you take the time to, you know, first of all, you have to identify that's important to you. And then once you do that, allocate that time to think about, okay, not only for myself, but if I'm going to buy a toy for my child, many of your listeners will have young children. For Pete's sake, do not buy a toy that has an online chat component in it. No. Do not buy a toy that has a camera in it. No. Do not buy a toy that has a Bluetooth connectivity in it for a three-year-old. This is the thing that we need to better understand because we can't rely on the companies to do it. That's for them as a gold mine. They're not going to take away the golden egg, right? So it's up to us to better educate ourselves and understand, you know, we have a say in this and we can do something about it at the very base level by not buying those things that are fundamentally dangerous to our privacy and our personal well-being.
I totally agree with you on all of that. I mean, that's how I don't have children. That's how I look at it. I'm always conscious of who is listening, who's paying attention. It's just because these devices are always there. I'd love to ask you about how scary is digital currency? Is it scary?
We have it today in a format. The only difference is that you can go and convert it into, you know, dollars and coin if you want to do that. You know, you can go and buy gold with it and stick gold under your mattress if you want to do that. So, but you can then turn that into, you know, you can go take the gold to the bank and they can deposit money in your bank account. That's all digital currency. It's just, you know, whether it's yours or whether it's, you know, the currency of another country, it's all digital and it's all tallied and brokered, right? So all that is, unless you're buying commodities, all currency is digital, right? The only difference is how do we identify and tie currency to an individual? Now that's, I think, what you're probably more interested in knowing what the safety is there, right? Yeah. So when we talk about digital currency, often in a negative sense, often what we're talking about is the ability to be tracked. So you know, if we talk about cryptology, I had a conversation with a gentleman very senior in the OPP at an event that I was at. And we were discussing some of the work that they're doing with artificial intelligence and how they're using it to help them better understand criminal activity. And the fact is that the criminal element is really latching on to technologies like this first, generally, and this is not uncommon. This has been that way forever. Criminals were the first ones to use the internet. Criminals were, criminals are the first ones to find out that you can, sell porn to make money or drugs or what have you, right? Like this is just, they're incredibly industrious that way. So they of course latched onto this, and now this is a way for them to be able to do things like, market children or traffic individual people or do things that a normal person would morally not be willing to do because they could be tied to their activity.
Yeah.
So do we want to be able to have to continue to be able to have the ability to separate yourself from that currency and be completely anonymous of it? You have the ability. You could go buy bars of gold, right? You can sell bars of gold anywhere you want. But as far as whether we're going to get away from that, there's too many challenges. The government spends billions of dollars printing money. They spend billions of dollars making sure that money continues to be identified as real. They continue to spend billions of dollars destroying that money to create new money to, replace the damaged or whatever, the lost or stolen or hoarded cash that they have. So I think that it does represent a valid concern, but if we answer the questions that I talked about earlier, if we talk about our ability to identify the privacy concerns that we have and give us more authority and control over what we share and when, then I think the currency thing becomes less of a challenging topic because I can choose to opt in or out when I need to. I can participate in the monetary necessities of a society where I can buy and sell and barter whatever using the currency of their choice. Because if I go to France, I got to use the euro. I don't get to pick something else that I want to use, right? If I'm in Canada, I use the Canadian dollar or the US dollar if I'm lucky. So I should be able to opt in and out of that. And by being able to have better control and tracking of my own personal data, as you say, avatar, which is a great way to put it, I think that would be a way to mitigate some of that risk that we might perceive. Because there's to face it, there's an incredible amount of efficiency to be had. The fact that, you don't want to have to go and dig 17 bars of gold out to go buy a car next week. That's going to be a real challenge for a lot of people to carry, right?
Yeah.
So we do need a method to effectively do commerce with one another. And digital currency is the most effective and efficient way to do that. I think we need to do better on the privacy and the data aspect of it. That will solve the problem of the risk of a government saying all that money that you have is now mine or something along those lines. And I've heard that's a concern that's often voiced, right? You had $1 million, now it's gone because it's digital currency, right? The fact is that it can happen today. If your bank has a cyber attack tomorrow, they could come to you and say that 100 grand they have sitting in your account doesn't exist. And it's happened. It doesn't exist. And it's up to you to prove that it did. Right. So, but what's the alternative? How would you store 100 grand tomorrow if you had it? Right. Are you safe having it? You feel comfortable having it in your house if you got young children?
No. See, that's the thing about it. You can't, right?
Right. You can't. So we have to be careful, I guess, what we wish for. Right. So, The problem with digital currency isn't the digital currency. The problem with the digital currency is how it's managed and how we manage its providence to the person who owns it. I think that's the more difficult thing. And there are ways to do that. Cryptocurrencies are doing it with blockchain technology and things like that. That's going to become, I think, more prevalent as we start to see the advent of even more false information and more convincing false information coming out with the advent of these AI video tools that are on the horizon, like OpenAI's Sora, and Google has a new one that's out now. These are incredibly frightening. We do need a better way to manage what is real and what is not real. And I think maybe blockchain might be a way that we can seek to do that moving forward. And it's a technology that some people are afraid of, but it's the best way to identify the authenticate a particular, whether it be a video or a stash of money or, any sort of digital content that you want to authenticate. That's the way you need to do it, I think. So that's the way I see that. I'm not afraid of it. I'm afraid of the consequences of not doing it properly.
Well, that's pretty much all kinds of aspects of digital, right? Like that's where I was going back, and I was just saying there's two sides,
right? It comes back to, again, it all comes back to how we how we want this to go, right? So when you see throw a politician saying, you know, I want to move to a digital currency, well, we just discussed the various different ways one could interpret that direction, right? Whether do they mean, you know, it means different things to different people. So as I said, this is a problem that's created when this technology is moving so quickly, but we're not educating everybody on what these things actually are, how they work at a very young age, so that when they grow up in that technology, they're not afraid of it. They understand the fundamental basics of it, right? We used to teach fundamentals all the way through school. And I hear many people lament that we don't teach the same fundamentals. But to be fair, the fundamentals have changed in some cases. Yeah. There are things that we don't need to worry about anymore. And there are other things that have replaced that as being more important. You know, back in the 60s, you didn't have to worry about your digital persona. Now you really do, because that will affect your ability. As a person who's born today, that will affect their ability to get a job 20 years from now. Right? And that never existed in the 60s. So we do need to modernize, how we teach ourselves this stuff, I think.
I would love for you to talk about how, I remember last year when Apple launched their latest software, and all of a sudden they left that one button open where you were able to walk by another Apple user and just get all their data right off their phone. And then people were sharing that on social media saying, turn this off right away. And sure enough, I was one of those guys that turned it off right away. But I can only assume in the 30 plus years that you've been in this business, identity theft has just, like, it's a different animal nowadays, isn't it? Or like how extreme, like I've seen certain people being interviewed and talked about cybersecurity, and they're talking about how, listen here, just enter this or whatever. And it's not even your password, but they are able to figure out what your password was right away, really quickly. And it's like, it's almost like a digital version of a Slim Jim robbing a car. Like the way people can do it now with the fobs and everything like that. Like identity theft, I can only assume is just easy. Is it easy nowadays?
It's much easier than it ever was, for sure. And I think, again, the reason for that is the protections put in place to manage this data are nowhere near as invested in as the technologies needed to collect and use this data, right? So security, like it always has been forever, is always an afterthought in many cases, right? It's not baked in at the beginning. And this is one of the challenges I've always had in my career, is I spend a great deal of my life sitting in front of people who have made technology choices who are now going, oh, crap, how do I protect that? This is super cool. And we need it because the business has identified a business outcome that they need to have executed on. But security and safety was, you know, it was like, oh, is it going to work? Yeah. Is it safe? Oh yeah, it should be safe. No problem. Away they go. But they'll spend $1 billion worrying about the solution to make that thing happen. But then later on go, wait a second. We just lost everything that we've done is for naught, because it just got hacked and all of our customer data is gone. And now our business is out of business because nobody trusts us anymore. Right. So we don't focus on security the way we should. And that is changing, because with the advent of AI, again, what's happening is, 10 years ago, there were a certain amount of hackers or, you know, malware providers and scammers and things like that. There's always going to be this floating number of how many of those people there are, because there's only so many people with those skill sets, right? But with the advent of AI, we've handed a loaded gun to billions of people and said, do whatever you want with that gun.
Yeah.
And so what's happening is now you have all of these people who have, I could, within 3 minutes, I could teach you how to generate a functioning piece of malware using nothing but publicly available artificial intelligence tools that are on the internet. So you could write malware code targeting one of the people that's in the room with you right now and execute it on them, right? You're not a hacker.
No.
But there are actually tons and tons of people, thousands and thousands of people, who are doing exactly that. They're using these new, game-changing tools to go and create malware code. And then they're turning that malware code on these unsuspecting companies who have not invested the requisite amount of necessary time or attention or money into the systems that they need to secure themselves. So if you talk about stealing data, that's becoming easier and easier because now I don't have to go and spend. I used to do audit and pen testing. So a company would hire myself and my team to basically break in, and we'd do either black hat or white hat hacking. So black hat hacking, in the simplest terms, nobody in the company other than the CTO knows that I'm going to hack them, right? So nobody knows I'm going to come in between this day and this day. I'm going to come in, I'm going to hack, and I'm going to try to, to get what I can get. Then there's white hat hacking where everybody knows I'm going to attack them. Right. So in if you're doing an attack like that, I was always successful, but it would take days and sometimes to find a hole that you were going to exploit to get in there. And most of the time it had to do with people, right? You had to be a better social engineering person. You had to buy a FedEx uniform and show up at the secured door of a company building. And of course the security guard will let me walk right in because I had a clipboard and a FedEx hat that I got from eBay. I just bypassed all of their security, right? Well, now, and the reason why we did that is because it was much, much harder to attack the software. Because the software, that's what it's designed for. It's there to protect you, and it doesn't, fall victim to nice words. The problem is now that even this technology is starting to fall victim to AI technology, which has this immense ability to draw on the entire internet's worth of knowledge and understanding just to attack your house man. Right, to guess your password. And to do that, it can instantly access everything you've ever put in Facebook. It can instantly access any other previous passwords you might have had from a data leak that occurred at Yahoo Mail 10 years ago. It might have been a conversation you had with somebody. All of that information is immediately right now available to AI to use to create whatever necessary skeleton key they need to attack your data. Right. So companies are not prepared for this. And as a result of that, we're seeing an increase in this activity. Right. And to make it even worse, companies are just like we share information for the dumbest reasons, like, oh, I want to know if my great aunt John, Carla was a sailor. So I'm going to go give my DNA to a random company on the internet. Well, companies are taking their databases that they've had for decades that they've been collecting and managing and protecting, and then exposing it to an AI so that they can use AI tools. And like their employees are taking it and putting it on the internet, right? So now all of this data is available to AI as well now, right? So this whole AI category is exploding in more ways than I think most people realize, and it generates a great deal of opportunity, but an immense amount of risk. And we really need to be better prepared for how, because it's not just guessing your password. It's not just guessing who you are. It's every aspect of who you are. It's everything you buy and consume. It's everything that you interact with your government for. Any one of these different areas of importance to you are going to be in some way impacted by this technology. And that's the first time we've seen that in probably, between, 50 or 60 years since probably the nuclear bomb, right? When they weren't even sure that that was going to work out well. So they tested it just to see. That's what we kind of did with this, with AI. We just put it in a box, said, oh, wow, this looks like it's going well. Let's just give it to everybody and put it out there
You're
and see what
making me
happens.
even more nervous, Robert. I mean, like, there's all kinds of stuff that's going on, right? I just like, how safe is Canada? How safe is America? Or which country is safe? Like, which country is kind of doing something about it? Or are we all being left to our own devices? It's really the responsibility of the citizens.
Well, we have to remember that governments are also made of people, right? Like one of us could be elected into government and now we're the government, right? So it's people. And the problem is that people are fallible. People are subject to their own experiences and understanding. This is the government that we have, right? And the next government we have will be no different in that regard, and that they will be impacted by their own experiences and understanding. So the fact is that governments are struggling because governments move slowly, typically. And we kind of want them in some ways to move slowly because we don't want them making rash decisions on things and, blowing things up or starting wars, or whatever. We count on the fact that they're a bit slower. But the problem is that this particular threat moves so quickly that other countries are seeing this as a tool of war, as a weapon. And it is being weaponized today dramatically. It's being weaponized, as you see in current conflicts in Europe. We see it being utilized in subtle ways, even amongst allies. It is happening today. So the fact is that no country, you can't say, I can't point to a country and say, oh, they're safe. There aren't any, because even if you feel safe and your own government is doing a great job of education and understanding and their own tools that they invest in, the fact is that another country might be doing more and might choose to, if you say, let's pick random, let's pick Sweden and say Sweden's doing an amazing job, they're kicking butt. Well, if China wakes up tomorrow and says, I don't like Sweden, I'm gonna do whatever I can to impact their people, they're going to be able to do that. And there's literally, it's not like they can fix it overnight. This is going to, there would be a significant challenge. We've seen it now with, I think I saw something on the news about Russia doing GPS satellite manipulation and jamming. It's causing impacts around Europe for countries close to Russia where they can't fly planes. And we start to realize how much we rely on GPS, right? The fact is, we rely on these technologies so much that if they're impacted in even the slightest way, it is of great detriment to us and our personal lives. So there is no country that's going to be able to put a legislation in place that is going to protect us from those challenges. We do need to protect ourselves, and we're so far away from that only because we're not doing a good enough job of educating ourselves about what the risks are. What are the actual risks? What is the risk of me buying that internet toothbrush? And I don't want anybody equating the internet toothbrush to World War III or anything like
No,
that. That's
it's the
kind of crazy.
connectivity. It's the connectivity of that toothbrush, right?
But yeah, but it's that thing. Like, do you have to make that decision? Do I really need that internet connected toothbrush? Do I need that internet connected toaster? And I had this conversation with my wife. She put a toaster in my shopping cart, and it had like a screen and AI, and it's internet. I was like, why do we need, like, I'm on the internet all the time. I don't need an internet connected toaster. I just don't need it. It's another IoT device that I have to manage and secure, right? So our company, literally, when you talk about, these are all IoT devices, right? The toothbrush, the toaster, the TV, all these things are IoT or Internet of Things devices. There's going to be over 800 billion of these devices on the internet in the next 5 years. Like,
Eight
this
hundred
is like
billion.
billion, like billion, yeah. Billion, right? So, like, it's an incomprehensible number because every device that's being created now is being pumped out with an IP stack on it, right? Every single board, and they're being used and reused and reused. And companies, instead of developing their own, are buying one off the shelf and then creating their product using that product, right? So, supply chain issues we start to see. The challenge now is that with all these devices connecting themselves online all the time, now we might not even be aware of what is internet connected or what is open, right? If you buy, maybe you buy this toy, and it says it has Wi-Fi, but the stack that's on it, the actual device inside it, has Bluetooth too. But you might not know that, or the manufacturer might have not have said that, or maybe the manufacturer didn't even know that there was a Bluetooth stack on there. They didn't sell it that way, but somebody else will find that, right? Somebody walking around the neighborhood with a BlueJacking scanner will find that device and then use that to exploit you, right? So we have to make the choices about what, like you did, what luxury do I really want and need, and what is the risk with that luxury? And, is that risk worth, is that worth the risk that I'm facing, essentially, is what I'm trying to say.
I'd like to bring it a little bit closer to home, and I know that I did a job a few years ago, and then we were talking about Faraday cages, right? Or Faraday pouches or whatever. Like, what exactly is it? A pouch? Is it a cage? Is it what? Like, is it a box? Or
It
was
depends how big you make it.
okay? So you get it could be any of them, kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
All it is just it stops the signal from entering and exiting. Is that the idea?
Correct. Yep.
Okay, and then you can just buy these anywhere.
No.
Oh, that's what
They'd
I'm
probably
saying.
be very expensive to buy one of any reasonable size. You can go on to Amazon or into Walmart or whatever, and you can buy little pouches for your car keys and things like that. And those, I highly recommend that. If you can find a little pouch, they're not that expensive. They're probably 30, 40 bucks. And you put your car key fob in there, and then that'll prevent those attacks where people come up to your front door and they use a scanner to duplicate your fob signal to, unlock your car in the driveway. So a Faraday cage will prevent that from happening. There are Faraday rooms in very expensive, signal sensitive installations that you can find, maybe in some telco establishments or military or spy agencies, I'm sure, will have Faraday rooms where the entire room is protected or the building is protected. incredible amount of money would be spent on that. You can imagine how inconvenient that would be for anybody who was trying to get their TikTok following up.
How do you create a Faraday room? Like what is the material? You're using a magnetic, is it a magnetic field or
No,
something?
it's going to be it's going to be metal shrouded essentially, right? So they're going to basically completely encase the room in a material that blocks signal.
Well, I mean, the one thing I do want to say is I've been hearing a lot of contractors having tools stolen, and they were fortunate enough to put an AirTag in one of the boxes or the bags that were having tools. And then they were fortunate enough, after they were dealing with a little bit of a fiasco with the police, to actually get their stuff back because of that. So then, as soon as that happened, they went out and they bought another dozen AirTags so they can put them into more devices so then they can track it, right? So that's kind of a. That goes along the good side of the digital side of things, right?
Milwaukee's built them into their tools, right? I think some other manufacturers have too. I bought a new saw and it has a tracking service as part of the actual saw. So yeah, this is an example where the technology makes a difference in a positive way. I had my car stolen when I moved from Ontario to Calgary. I hired what I thought was a reputable moving company who proceeded to steal my car.
The moving
So
company did?
it's a moving company did, yeah.
They
So I had, they're it's currently being litigated, so that's a good thing. But they had no intention of giving me my car back, but I managed. They actually disconnected the OnStar connectivity, which is the little red button in your car you were talking about that we can talk to somebody. So they actually disconnected the GPS locator of the car itself, which was built into most new cars, by pulling the fuse on it. But I had put, because I was moving, I had stuffed a bunch of stuff in the second trunk because it's an electric car. There's a big opening in the floor, so I put a bunch of things in there that I wanted to come earlier so that they would come with the car. And in that, I also threw an AirTag, and I'd forgotten about it. Weeks go by, and I hadn't heard from this company. They weren't taking my phone calls anymore. They became impossible to get a hold of. I called the police, and they basically reported what had happened. They said, "Well, your car's been stolen. Here's what you do." And I called the insurance company. But about a week later, my phone ding, and it's my car. I'm like, "Oh my God, I've got an AirTag in there. I forgot about that." So next thing you know, I see my car is on its way across Canada. Because it's on its way to Vancouver, right? Likely to be stuck on a container ship or
Container,
something,
yeah, oh, for sure.
right? So I managed to actually track it down, and then I drove around Calgary when I saw it coming in, and I found the little secret lot where they had it buried behind an old school bus and another trailer. They slid the car trailer in between them, and they were, taking vehicles off with it. I saw them, from a distance. I pulled in the lot, and I was like to the side. It was like a truck driving school company was the front for it. And I watched them pull it off, and I called the police, and they did a takedown right there from me. They said, "Don't move. You stay there. What car are you driving right now? So we know, that you're the good guy." And I watched them put them all in cuffs and take them away, and they handed me my car keys back, and I was able to leave with my vehicle because of the air
Because the air, that's I like them. I just didn't make sense to me,
tag.
right? But
The
you,
problem is that people are also sticking those in women's purses because they want to follow them home.
well, see, and that's where I was gonna go is that I've heard people like people that want to steal, they don't need to follow you anymore. They could just tag it somewhere and attach it to your vehicle if they see you stepping out of your vehicle in a shopping mall parking lot or whatever. And now they'll just follow their tag, follow you home, and then they'll pick the car at that point, right?
Now, to Apple's credit, so this is a good example of what can happen and what right looks like, right? So Apple did a good job with this because, somebody at Apple's like, "This is a great thing. This is what we're going to use it for." Who would ever think about raping women or men with our tool? Like, I'm sure nobody that was designing that was thinking this would be a great rape tool, right? Like, that's not what happened in that situation, right? So, but the fact is, people are horrible in some cases. So you do have to think more about that. But when they were confronted with the fact that this was happening, they made a change. They're like, "Okay, well now if there's an AirTag that doesn't belong to you that's traveling in your circle, you will get an alert saying that there's an AirTag that's not yours that's following you closely." and you'll know right away to search your stuff and look around whether or not you have that. That's a technology change that was made in response to a security threat that existed, and that the software company, Apple in this case, said, yeah, let's, we can fix that, and here's the fix for that. And I think that's that kind of feedback is what will can improve a lot of this stuff, right? If we had direct feedback with results like that on all of these other technologies that we're talking about, it would be a different story. But Apple's a massive company with billions of dollars in R&D and tons of resources that they can bring to bear to fix these things. A lot of these other companies don't have that. So as a result of that, they don't give a shit. They've made the product, it's out there, you bought it, it's your problem
It's your
now. Have a
problem
nice
if
day.
anything goes wrong, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you've been in this space a long time, Robert. I mean, are we ever going to get to Cyberdyne systems? Are we ever going to get to that whole, like, is
We're
technology
almost there
ever going to
now.
take over?
We're
Yeah,
almost
are we almost there right now? I mean, I'm seeing
There
robots.
now.
I'm seeing robots already being put together, and I've seen robots
Oh
on
yeah.
spraying walls and lifting things in the construction sector. I'm seeing that already, right? But I mean, are we gonna? I'm pretty sure we'll see it in our lifetime. We'll totally see that.
100% we will. There's no question. So it's right around the corner. Like if I look at a lot of the work that's being done, I'm not sure if it's Tesla that's involved in this or one of Musk's companies, but I've been looking at some of the robotics part, because remember, there's the AI aspect of it, and then there's the robotics side of it, and it's the combination of those two things that are going to have the most impact on how effective that is. And before, we had the technology from a robotics perspective, but the intelligence side of it we didn't really have. Now, with the advent of AI and machine learning, we are starting to see robots that are far more capable of making the same types of choices that we would make, right? So in a great example, I saw a demonstration, and I believe it's using OpenAI's backend, where this robot was standing in front of a person, and it had a, a basket with a bunch of fruit and some junk food and a couple of other things, and a dish tray and some dishes. And the person, walked up to the robot and was like, hey, could you hand me something to eat that's healthy? And the robot took a look at what was in front of it on a table and took the orange and handed the orange to the person. So that level of intelligence, that's not just robotics. Now it's robotics combined with an intelligent backend, an actual learning intelligent backend that would make choices like we would make. So that's what's going to make the change when you have a robot, say, in construction, or you mentioned maybe spraying a wall. Well, now that robot's going to be able, instead of just like a normal robot, which will keep spraying, even if a person stands there, it'll spray them right over the wall, right? Now the robot's going to know that there's a person there and that they shouldn't spray when the person's there, but will know enough that when that person leaves, they can go ahead and finish the work they were doing and what have you. So that's the game changer part that makes it more efficient. Companies are going to be able to look at that and go, well, the overall outcome for my business is going to be better. Yes, that robot's going to be expensive, but it's going to do a better job than most people would do, because if robot's not, bracing for the break or whatever, or didn't have its kids call it and had to leave to go take care of something, that's why they're moving that direction. So what I think is going to happen is there's going to be a space for folks in this field to become experts in how these devices learn and execute. So if you are a master electrician, for example, there's going to be an electrician robot. There's going to be a drywaller robot, right? Instead of saying, you cannot stop the future. You're not going to stop it from happening. It doesn't matter how many times you protest or what union belong to, you might be able to slow it, but you're not stopping it. So the best thing to do is to position yourself to take advantage of it and be the person who's like, okay, I'm an ex, my brother, I'm a master electrician. I'm going to teach this robot how to be a master electrician and do the best job possible. And now everybody's going to seek me out because I'm the guy that does the best job of doing that. And it's no different than if they would hire him to be the electrician. He's going to do the best job. My brother is amazing at what he does. So they hire him for that reason, right? So I think that this is where, we it's the old story where, oh my God, the cars are coming. What's going to happen to the people who shovel shit off the streets from the horses? Well, they're going to be free to do something else. But, they're, we this is inevitably we're going to move on from that. So I think that we do owe it to ourselves to start thinking in terms of that. The most progressive of us will be thinking in terms of, okay, how do I be successful, in the next 2 years, and how do I be successful in the next 5 years? Where do I need to be? What do I need to know and understand so I can take the knowledge that I have now, which is very valuable, and continue to provide that value in a different format, whether, be training a robot or a system or helping a company design something better, whatever that might be.
So, I mean, there's two thoughts I have right now about this is I'm old enough to know when you got a car meant freedom. The definition of car meant freedom. But now our car today, nobody ever talks about it being freedom. A car is not a freedom toy. You know what I'm saying? Like just an everyday go to point A, point B kind of vehicle. There's so much technology in it that it's taken the freedom component out of it. And regarding the AI and then you getting these robots, it is inevitable that's all going to happen. And I guess the biggest concern is going to be, are people going to lose their purpose of living? Like, because they won't have to do anything other than just exist versus we always worked hard when we were younger. We provided, we did something like your Joe Jobs or whatever. Everybody's done their bus tables, all kinds of stuff. And that's all going to be gone now because all of those jobs or all those tasks are going to be taken care of by, you know, AI and robots. And you're going to wonder, what are humans going to do at that point?
Yeah, so that's a well-discussed philosophical question. I think that, you know, I think we derive value from the things that we find important to us, right? So, you know, if the one thing that you have that defines you is the work that you do, it's going to be a real challenge. I don't think that everybody would define themselves strictly by the work that they do. I think there's, you know, we're multifaceted human beings. We have a lot of different things that are interesting to us. You know, myself, I'm a cybersecurity person, but as you can see in the background, I'm also a photographer.
Yeah.
I have other interests and things that I like to spend a bit more time on. Do I really need to spend the 50 to 60 hours a week doing what I'm doing right now? If I can get that down to 30 hours a week and have a better work-life balance and be healthier and die older instead of younger and have more time with my children, would they turn out better? All of these things are things we begin to ask ourselves, because it's not going to happen tomorrow that our job disappears and it's over. If it did, then we haven't been paying attention. So I do think that we have an opportunity to shape, because this is going to happen, you know, not slowly, but slow enough that we are going to be able to have an impact and a say on how it happens. Right. So again, right now, I don't think anybody on your show would say, especially those in the trades, they're some of the hardest working people, where they sit there and go, they wouldn't like an extra 10 hours a week to invest in a project of their own.
Of course. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This is what this could potentially enable for them. Right. And this is why this change could be positive if it's managed effectively. If it's not, if we're like that guy that shoveled shit off the road and go, well, that's it. And we throw our hands in the air and go, I'm done because nobody needs shit shovelers anymore. You're probably going to suffer the worst of it. Yeah. I would imagine. Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are a lot of those guys did stop shoveling shit and probably, you know, called it a day. But those other people went on and worked at a factory or went on and did something else and, you know, and made money or whatever. So I think that there will always be the opportunity for us to reinvent. And I think that society will continue to reinvent. I think that we will continue to see this technology empower areas of human growth that maybe we didn't see before. I don't know what it is because it hasn't happened yet, but I do hope that allows us to invest more in time with our families. I hope that it allows us, for example, to take better care of our senior citizens and our children. I hope that it allows us to spend less time fighting each other and, you know, worrying about whether or not, I look at poverty and other major the housing issues, all these sorts of things that properly applied, some of these technologies can have a real positive impact. It'll improve. And high tide raises all boats.
Yeah.
If we start addressing these issues using the tools that we have, I think over time we will start to improve everything for all of us, including, you know, ourselves.
I just don't want it to be so engrossed in profitability. That's all.
That's the huge risk. And that is the single, in my opinion, the single biggest risk of all of this is when we tend to take the humanity out of it when we focus strictly on the profit, right? And we're all working harder and harder and harder to make the same money. Whereas, you know, if companies continue, we see this thing like shrinkflation. And, you know, my son even noticed it. And, you know, at 18 years old, he hasn't had to buy his own food in his life. But yet he opened the cupboard and he was like, Dad, when I made Kraft dinner yesterday, I was still hungry after I finished the box of Kraft dinner. You know, 2 years ago, I could eat a box of Kraft dinner and you and I could eat the box of Kraft dinner. And he goes, I said, well, Max, the box is the same, but am I just that much bigger? And I showed him the difference between the same size box, but this one had 200 grams of Kraft dinner and the other one had, you know, 400 grams of Kraft dinner. It was only 2 years older. Yeah. And he was flabbergasted. He had no idea that was even happening.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So
wait till he gets to the chips, to the Doritos, get into the bags and realize it's more air than chips,
now he's
right?
He's looking for it. Yeah. He's looking for it. He's like, oh, my God, look at this one, Dad. Look at this one, Dad. So it's good because he's now educated a bit more and he's thinking in terms of that. And he's going to make choices to not buy that craft beer. He's going to buy something else or make his own. Because he knows that, because he's educated now.
I even saw that in construction a few years ago when I started noticing that the 50-pound bags of Thin Set were now 42.5 pounds a bag. And their thought process was it's lighter and easier on the tradesperson. But get this, the 42.5-pound bag is the same price as the 50-pound bag.
Yes. Of course
so
it is.
It's so not again, about easier.
This is marketing, right?
It's all.
This is just marketing. You could use AI to create a marketing thing to sell axe murderers. I'm telling you, like, yeah. And it would do a great job. And you'd be like, maybe they're not so bad. I mean, there's this is where we are today, right?
It's
so
true.
Look at these emails that people are getting in their inbox where they're falling for these scam after scam after scam after scam because they're so believable. They're and as you said before, the truth is not the truth anymore. Like the companies are perfectly comfortable to tell you something that is not in your best interest and have you ask for some more when they're done, you know? And again, it's because we're not educated. And the more we educate ourselves, the more we'll be able to make choices with our money, which will better, you know, companies are not like super brilliant entities. If you stop buying their shit, they'll go away or they'll change their way to, because they want you to buy their shit. So they're going to change.
That's true.
Right.
That's 100%
and as long
true.
As they're making tons of money by screwing you over, they're going to continue screwing you over.
Yep. Because it's profitable.
It.
It's as simple as that. Robert,
so we have to pay.
I totally agree with you. So basically, I mean, I got to do the 12 questions before I let you go, cause I know you're busy, but basically just don't be buying all kinds of enabled appliances or like washing machines and all. I don't understand.
I think
this,
if
man.
You need it, maybe you need it. Maybe you have a need for it, right? You might be so have somebody in the house who's, you know, not as ambulatory as someone else that can't walk or something.
Or
and maybe
true,
needs
fair enough,
make,
yeah.
Right?
But an average day family and the kids and everything, you do not
but
need
know the risk.
Chimes know the risk. And connectivity, and you do not need an app telling you that your load is finished now and then you can go and change it. Like, you don't need any of that. I definitely don't need to know my toast is ready. I don't need any of that stuff.
I can look. I can smell it.
I can smell it. I know it's ready. Exactly. Robert Falzone again, Checkpoint Software Technologies, www.checkpointsoftwaretechnologies.com and Robert.
Oh, no, it's www.checkpoint.com.
www.checkpoint.com.
Yeah.
Oh, .com. It's not software.
Yep.
Okay. Sorry. So, there you go. All right, cool. 12 questions. What is your favorite construction word?
Oh, boy. Gun.
Gun?
It's done.
Oh, it's done. It's done.
I feel best when it's done because I'm not a construction worker. So I'm usually hiring construction workers. When they come to me and say, done, I'm like, yeah.
That's a great word. Least favorite tool?
My least favorite tool
doesn't have to be construction. It could be anything.
Oh, well, I've been using a lot of tools lately because of the work that I've been doing around the house. So, but I would have to say that my least favorite tool is probably the measuring tape.
They have digital ones now, eh? They even have scanners now. You can scan
and they're
your
terrible. Own. They're terrible.
I know.
they're terrible.
What do you miss from your childhood?
I think I miss the safety of my childhood, the simplicity of my childhood. I think I miss being able to go out and ride my big wheel around the sidewalk and not worry, the way I do now about the things, you know, my son's going to face. I miss a lot of that, having no responsibility, and just being able to ride that big wheel.
It's true. Green machine, big wheel.
Green machine, yeah.
What construction sound do you love?
That's an interesting one. I don't know. I think my favorite sounds probably the staple gun. I like the way that thing sounds.
Favorite beverage?
My favorite beverage is beer.
Any particular one?
I like IPAs. Yeah.
What turns you on and off in construction?
I would have to say a turn off for me are the those who are not really engaged in their business. So those who don't really give a shit about their own business. So I've tried to work through a bunch of contractors and, you know, they'll not show up or they'll just, they're you know, they don't really seem to care about the fact that you're trying to hire them to do some work. I've encountered that, and it's really, really difficult and annoying. But what turns me on about it is when I see somebody who really takes the care and does the work as though they're doing it for themselves. And that really, really impresses me. And I've had the fortunate pleasure of working with a home builder when I lived in Oshawa, a gentleman, Strahl Construction, who I remember coming home while I was building my house at 2 a.m. just to check on it, just because I was excited. And he was in there with a headlight on and a screw gun, making sure my floors didn't squeak because it was quiet and you could do that without anybody bothering him. I was just blown away. So that kind of thing really, really impresses me.
That's nice. What is your favorite curse word?
Ah, fuck. That's my favorite one for sure.
Go to. Favorite vehicle, the entire world, any mode of transportation?
Probably the airplane because of the places that brought me.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
Other than my own that I would like to attempt one day? That's a tough one. I would, I think I would like to be a teacher.
A teacher? Grade or high or post? What kind of teacher?
Probably not the super young, because my patience is not what it used to be. But certainly anywhere, you know, teenager to even older. They even see. I just enjoy the feeling of seeing that aha moment when somebody learns something new. I'm excited by that.
That's true. What profession would you not like to do?
I would not like to be a doctor.
I don't want to be one.
I don't have the stomach for it.
Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Come right in.
Robert, thank you very much, man. I appreciate that, the time. Oh, it's been a great conversation, man. I know it's a little scary, but I think the message in this whole show is basically just do as much as you want to do and just be aware of what's going on. Don't turn
take
a blind
control
eye.
Control of what you have.
Yeah, that's 100%. Don't take everything for granted, thinking, that's fine. We're safe. We got a little blocker there. Totally. We're fine. No, it's fine. We need more than that. Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Don't go anywhere yet. I got to get a photo of you. But that's it. We're all done for now.